south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, so I'm driving along looking for an address with one of the only apps I have on my somewhat smartphone, Waze. It's something you absolutely have to have here in Latin America if you're going to find anything, because you've heard me say in past shows, Latin American cities and counties are not laid out on a logical Cartesian map like in the States. They're laid out more or less like European or Spanish cities, which means practically anything goes. And there are infinitely more streets, boulevards, and avenues named after people, places, and things than they are given a logical number. So you're really screwed and confused if, one, you don't know much Spanish, and two, if you haven't got some kind of location app like Waze. And you know they're free, which means they're really not free. They're collecting your data. That's the big downside. But there's an easy way to stick it to them. Throw a wrench in the works. So, yes, I do use it once in a while myself, but I always turn off the GPS on my somewhat smartphone once I get to that destination. Oh, and I've noticed, and this is really sad, that about once every month or two, I'll get a message from Google because, you know, I have a Gmail account, everyone does. And I guess when you use location apps like Google Maps or Waze, they keep a permanent record of where you've been by your GPS coordinates. And they're not shy about telling you about it because every month or so, you'll get a message saying, "Hey, friend, like to look at your Google Map or travel history?" To which I'd like to reply to someone, a real human being, but, of course, you never can. Everything's automated these days. Boy, I wish I could say, "F off. None of your f business." Oh, and just one day, I'd like to meet the lady whose voice they use on Google Maps or Waze and just slap the shit out of her. I'm sure in her real life, people recognize her when she speaks. They probably do double takes all the time. Same thing with that guy who posed for 200 million Jesus pictures, you know, the brown sepia ones that every Christian, especially good Catholic families, have hanging in the house somewhere. I bet that guy in his day had more trouble dodging the public than the Beatles. I mean, really. Picture that guy at the airport. "Hey, Harry, have a look over there. Check that guy out. Jesus, is that who I think it is?" "Yeah, Artie, Jesus." I'll bet you that guy could make some real dough on the talk show circuit. But that picture's been around, what, 50, 60 years now? I bet he's dead. And then there's that ubiquitous voice of the Waze and Google Maps lady. I know, it's not really her fault, it's just a job, right? At least I assume it's a real human being fronting that voice.
"In 2 kilometers, toma una izquierda."
"In 2 kilometers, take a left." I know, up by you, she's speaking English, but down here, she speaks Spanish. Hey, so maybe they have an app where you can get rid of her voice and substitute another, maybe your own, or your ex's or your mother-in-law's. I don't know, but I really do want to punch that annoying puta in the kisser. By the way, why is it mother-in-laws who have over the years taken so much heat, never the father-in-law? You know what that means, don't you, and what the future holds? That means mother-in-laws will be looking for reparations. Mother-in-laws, where's your support group? I'm sure you'll have one soon. Mother-in-laws matter. MILM. So why do they get all the media and the press and father-in-laws get nothing? They're off the radar completely. Where's the equality police when you need them? But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah, talking about driving through Latin America and finding places. Well, I had an address the other day. I'm driving around using Waze because I can't figure out where the hell I am or where my destination is. Besides that, you know, if you come to Latin America, you'll find out they've got more one-way streets than bi-directional streets. It's just nuts. There's one area town in Guatemala City in Zone 9, I think it is, a pretty decent zone, where they've got 5 one-way streets in a row, all going the same direction. It absolutely blows your mind how stupid and brain-dead the so-called, and I mean so-called, civil engineers are in Latin America. It's like they took the bottom 10% of a mediocre civil engineering class, separated out the drunks and retards, gave them all a calculator, a ruler, a map of the city, a bottle of tequila, and a hit of acid, and said, "Go ahead, lay down some roads, have at it." I'm not kidding. In most Latin cities, it's absolute murder to find a place without the help of a program like Google Maps or Waze. In fact, I can tell you of a number of examples where I myself got lost for sometimes hours looking for a place that I had passed within spitting distance of, but because of all the crazy-ass jumble of names and one-way streets, not to mention my bad Spanish in the early days, well, it was enough to drive you nuts. Oh, and don't think you'll get much help going to a place that you think might matter, like a gas station, asking one of the attendants where so-and-so location is. Well, they'll tell you where it is, all right, or at least point you in the general direction, but they only do that to be nice. Usually the guys working there have no idea, because they're not from that hood. They're coming to work by subway or chicken bus from a far-off district, and they do know about the neighborhood they live in, but that could be 10 or 20 miles away. But even if you're asking about someplace that's in the immediate vicinity of the gas station, chances are they won't know exactly where it is either, but they'll take a shot at it just so you walk away happy. They want to help. Only rarely will a Latino admit he doesn't know. You won't hear, "No sé, señor." Instead, they'll think on it a while and give you their best guess, even if it's wrong. I'll tell you, before 5 or so years ago, before the age of Waze and Google Maps, trying to estimate your time of arrival to a particular destination was a total crapshoot. Oftentimes, a 15-minute projected ride would end up taking an hour and a half. That was common. And then there's those crazy street names. And the fact that half the streets or more aren't even marked. Why? Because it costs money to put up signage in Latin America. Well, you know, they don't call it the third world for nothing, right? But somehow, Waze and Google Maps have managed to put it all together. And although I absolutely hate Google, that's probably the one thing that's really benefited society, at least society here in the third world, that do deliveries as part of their business. By the way, just a couple of weeks ago, I had that very same conversation with a UPS driver here. Imagine what it was like to find places and deliver a package for them before the age of Waze, GPS, and Google Maps. So anyway, just the other day, I was looking for a place on Calle Felicidad. Translation in English, Happiness Street. You gotta love it, huh? Imagine if you lived on Happiness Street in Cleveland, or Detroit, or the south side of Chicago. Talk about oxymorons, huh? So anyway, plug in Calle Felicidad. And I see on the Waze pop-down list, there's a Calle Felicidad, a Calle Felicidades, a Calle Felicito, and Calle de Felicitaciones. And although they all have the same root word, and they all were pretty far away from each other, think about trying to suss that out if your Spanish sucks. And though they all have the same root word, feliz, happy, they don't quite mean exactly the same thing. You've got Happy Street, Happiness Street, Congratulations Street. Yep, Felicitaciones means congratulations. Well, you get the idea. And if you think there's only 3 or 4 ways to say happy or feliz in Spanish, man, are you wrong. In fact, there are 30 ways to conjugate or say the word happy using the word feliz as the root word. For example, you've got feliz, felicitaras, felicitaría, felicito, felicitan, felicitarías, felicitarían. Well, you get the picture. Confused yet? The point is, any one of those 30 ways to say happy in Spanish can end up being a name of a street in a big city in Latin America. Talk about confusion, huh? Worse yet, you've got hundreds, if not thousands, of streets in any big Latin city named after angels and religious icons. Then there's a big percentage of streets named after malignant, psychopathic, genocidal dictators, too. And still, the only statues that activists have managed to drag down are statues of Colón or Columbus. I guess, in a way, that's a good thing. Now, I guess the anti-Columbus crowd can go home and eat their Thanksgiving dinner in peace. Oh, and yesterday I got an email from a vegan who signed off by saying, "Happy Turkey Holocaust Remembrance Day, Johnny." Isn't that sweet? By the way, you know, Latinos don't celebrate Thanksgiving. Though they've got about 10 other holidays they celebrate that you don't have up in the States. Toiki Day's not one of them. Although there are tons of wild turkeys here in Latin America. But I digress. Where were we? Oh yeah, on Happiness Street. So I did end up at the correct destination. And the street, well, or at least the people hanging around, well, they were pretty happy, as is usual for most all of Latin America. You know, it still is amazing. It baffles me how people who live in what we'd call dumps, just kind of surviving from day to day, people who, you know, really don't have a future, how in most cases they're just so polite and happy. How about you? Are you polite and happy? Well, maybe you are, but you can't be happy all the time. The trick is not to be unhappy, right? You know, to wake up in the morning, have that little discussion in your head, say to yourself, Hey, Johnny, let's get up now. It's going to be a good day today. How often does that happen to you? Instead of thinking, man, I think I'll go back to sleep for another couple hours, because getting up just ain't worth it. And, you know, I've been hearing that's the attitude of a lot of people living up in the States, especially when they wake up and tune in to the lame street media, get hooked on all that fake science and fake news claptrap. It's enough to make anyone want to stay in bed. And now it seems, even after the big reset button's been pushed and the bubble has been popped, there's another thing to worry about. People are awful concerned about whether or not we're going to have a second wave of this COVIDiot crap. Already we're seeing all kinds of stories in the lamestream media building up to it. So then what can you believe? Well, you can't believe the damn lame street media. Not the stuff coming out of the first world. Now, as for me, I tune into the lame street media once in a while because you have to know what the enemy's thinking. Meanwhile, I'm always tuned in to the media here in Latin America, which is completely different from the first world lame street media. You might not realize this, but they still have an army of straight-ahead, uncorruptible journalists here in Latin America that tell it like it is. They take risks and sometimes get disappeared for it and don't kiss up to governments, big business, or even media. It's that lag time thing as it relates to journalism. Journalism like it was in the 70s, 80s, and 90s back in the States. That is when there were hundreds of little media establishments and seven big companies didn't own everything. Now, as for investigative journalists here in Latin America, even in Cuba and Venezuela, most of them tell it like it is because they've got integrity, something that's kind of disappeared from journalism in the States, at least in the mainstream, but you knew that already. For example, I'm looking at an article right now that just came out today in one of South America's biggest Spanish-speaking newspapers. All right, so what do you make of this? It says, an official Ministry of Health report coming out of Ecuador said Wednesday, the 25th of November, that the mortality rate for COVID-19 in Ecuador has returned to normal. The impact of the COVID-19 pandemic has subsided. The ministry also reports that hospital occupancy, including that of all intensive care units in Ecuador, is back to pre-pandemic levels. You got that? Contrary to what you've been hearing up in the first world, they're saying little Ecuador, which was a real hotspot for COVID at least a couple of months ago, has reverted back health-wise to pre-COVID days. Well, I kind of doubt you're hearing that up in the first world. You're hearing just the opposite, right? So anyway, just 2 days ago, with Ecuador's Minister of Health being quoted as saying, quote, from March to October, we recorded 5,829 more deaths than for the same period of 2019. With the assumption that these additional deaths are due to the Corona-19 virus. However, our new numbers for November have returned to 2019 levels, pre-COVID-19 pandemic levels. And then, get this, he also added, quote, recent information suggests that most of our March to October excess deaths were not the result of the coronavirus at all, but from other causes, including delayed medical care, suicide, and accidents. With the trend in reported COVID infections, hospitalizations, and deaths continuing downward. I mean, really, what a sad admission coming this late from Ecuador's highest government healthcare official, who now admit they caved in to the fever pitch of worldwide COVID-19 mass hysteria. So the takeaway from this is the COVIDiot stuff has been blown way out of proportion, with wishy-washy, lard-ass government authority figures now slowly waking up to the fact that they themselves contributed more to the actual problem than the virus itself. And how about the fact that no one's reporting any deaths due to the regular flu that comes around each year and kills something like 50,000 people a year in the States? And according to the WHO's own figures, around 650,000 worldwide deaths attributed to the seasonal flu each year. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Those are all COVID deaths now, right? Something doesn't smell right, and it hasn't for quite a few months. So about this second wave and all those proposed new lockdown measures, that doesn't smell right either. Meanwhile, speaking of the COVIDiot stuff and the vaccinations that will be coming worldwide and here in Latin America, we've got Dr. Sandra Fryhofer from the AMA noting that both Pfizer and Moderna's COVIDiot vaccines require 2 doses at varying intervals. Turns out this AMA official, American Medical Association, which to me is just an arm of Big Pharma, because when you go to those meetings, they're always sponsored by Big Pharma. They sponsor much of the research, too. That's not much of a conflict of interest. Not much, right? Big Pharma at those AMA meetings also gives away tons of free stuff. They've got the AMA in their pocket, but you knew that already, right? Anyway, the cracks in the ceiling are evident. Listen to this. She says, as an AMA executive and practicing physician, she says she worries whether her patients will even come back for a second dose, because there will be unpleasant side effects that many people may experience. We must make our patients aware that this is not going to be a walk in the park. She says, quote, once the patients get that vaccine, they're going to know they had one. They're probably not going to feel wonderful. But we have to somehow get them back a couple of weeks later for that second dose. She says that on the heels of Moderna and Pfizer's comments after the coronavirus vaccine trials, they reported to CNBC, patients were experiencing high fever, body aches, bad headaches, day-long exhaustion, and other symptoms. They report that the symptoms were uncomfortable and at times intense, with participants saying the symptoms often went away after a day, and though uncomfortable and sometimes intense, it was, many said subjectively, better than getting COVID-19. Amazing what scare hype will do to you, huh? So both companies acknowledged to CNBC that there could be many side effects, similar to a mild case of COVID-19, such as muscle pains, chills, and headache. Then it says one North Carolina woman who was in the Moderna COVID vaccine study, who was in her 50s, said she experienced a fever, was unable to focus because she had a very bad migraine for a day. She said if this vaccine really does work, people are going to have to toughen up. The first dose is probably no big deal, but then the second dose will definitely put you down for the day for sure. Then get this, she says, some people in my trial were disappointed that they didn't have any of my symptoms. They were sure they must have gotten the placebo, she said. All right, so that's what you're up against if you get that damn vaccine. The question is whether you get symptoms or not in the first 24 hours. What about a year, 2 years, or 5 years down the line? The whole thing just stinks. Oh, and don't forget, as mentioned in the last show, every hospital, clinic, and government health organization that receives that vaccine has to store it at 70 below zero. 70 below zero. No standard, even laboratory refrigerator goes that low. You need some special approved and certified hardware to consistently achieve that low temperature. And the cost of just one of those small freezers, at least $10,000. Now, just imagine if you happen to be in the very niche market of low-temperature medical-grade freezers. You probably do all right selling a few hundred a year. Now, according to the American Hospital Association, the AHA, there are a total of 7,300 active hospitals in the U.S. and over 100,000 neighborhood medical clinics. And, of course, every city and town in the U.S. has a health department in charge of local immunizations for kids. And we have, by 2020 stats, over 500,000 practicing medical doctors. That's just in the U.S. So, looking at a market for these specialty freezers at 10 grand a crack, of around 100,000 to 500,000 units needed just in the next few months. So let's do the numbers. Suppose on the low end, there's an order for 100,000 of these times 10 grand a piece. And I imagine even in quantity, it'll be that much or more, because you'll need pretty big ones to hold all those vaccines, not those small little countertop boxes you see in some labs. You're talking about minimally $1 billion worth of freezers. And you know, there's only three or four such specialty companies that make those devices. Man, I wonder what the stock ticker symbol for those companies might be. See where I'm going with this? We really are living in some kind of fantasy land, huh? Meanwhile, back on Tierra Firma, more solid ground, here's an email from Frankie, who's been living the life of an expat in Antigua, Guatemala for 5 or so years now. He says, Johnny, in the studio apartment complex I live in, the dryer has started having problems getting the clothes dry. They called the repairman, who said the solution was that the dryer was too close to the wall. He moved the dryer out about a foot, put some wood blocks down to lift it up, and that worked last week. But the problem came back. I noticed the exhaust vent at the back of the machine is blocked by a metal cap. I wonder if they just screwed up and didn't take the cap off or something, and in doing so might solve everything. Wasn't a problem before, but now it is. What do you think, Johnny? Signed, Frankie. All right, thanks for that, Frankie. But, you know, I would usually never read such a mundane email on this show. I mean, not that it's mundane to Frankie because he's having a problem, right? But it's kind of specific to him, you'd think, anyway. The only reason why I am reading it is because he sent another email, which outlines a much greater problem almost all of us gringos and expats run into at some time or another. All right, here's the follow-up email. He says, Johnny, actually, the exhaust port isn't blocked at all. It's just that there's no hose to vent the dryer to the outside. This being the case, I wonder if it would be best just to leave the laundry room door open at the time so that the hot air has some place to exhaust to. After all, it's that hot, humid air that's got to get out of that room somehow or else the clothes will never get dry. All right, Frank and everybody else out there, there's a real clothes drying problem in Latin America that starts with the fact that probably only one Latino in 50 or even 100 has a real bona fide clothes dryer. And when us gringos and expats who've gotten out of Dodge land in Latin America, we expect certain appliances. We've got our standards, so we opt to get a dryer, almost all of us. Of course, most appliance stores carry them, but you almost never see them in middle class or even upper middle class households. Only, it seems, in the houses of the upper classes and the idle rich. And of course, where you do see them, the owners never touch the buttons. They wouldn't know how to use them. It's always the cleaning lady who does that chore. And often the dryer doesn't even get used because the cleaning lady is afraid to use it or just doesn't trust it and prefers her method of hanging clothes outside. So then why wouldn't a cleaning lady trust a dryer? It's an easy mechanism. It's got one or two buttons you gotta set and that's it, right? For the same reason, Frankie wrote this email. Turns out because dryers are so scarce, Latin Americans have no idea that you have to have an exhaust port going to the outside of your building somehow, or the room your dryer's sitting in will always be terribly humid and the clothes will take ages to dry. And believe me, it's not enough to leave a door or window open either. Though that might help a bit. Remember, over time, there's a ton of lint blowing out of that dryer hose too, and that's going to collect and settle everywhere. In fact, the last apartment I moved into was in a residential tower, rather new and on the high end, had its own gym, jacuzzi, and pool on the top floor. Rather nice. And each person's laundry room had a hookup for a dryer, but most people didn't hook one up. Besides that, the contractor, never put a hole in the wall for the vent. And being that it's a residential tower, there are condominium rules. And the rules say you can't hang your laundry out on the railing outside the balconies. No clothes can be seen from the street, which often made me wonder, where do people who don't have dryers dry their clothes? Though again, I've been in many a Latin home, even homes in high-rise residential towers, and I've seen clothes hung every which way in every room. So then why don't people buy them and use them? They're not that expensive. Well, the problem is exactly the same one Frank has. I've been in homes of Latinos who've had dryers, and not one of them has ever had the exhaust hose hooked up right. As in my last apartment, they had a flexible hose. It just drooped like a slinky onto the floor, and that's where all the exhaust air and dust and mota, as they call lint, ended up. And man, I'll tell you, when the dryer was going and you walked into that room, it was like a sauna. So I did what any gringo would do. I was renting, so I couldn't very well punch a hole in the wall, like you should, to vent the exhaust to the outside. Instead, I bought a flexible aluminum tube extension. You know, it looked like a big slinky. And I put a couple of hooks in the wall, hung a couple of nylon straps to fasten it, and ran that hose to the nearest window, which is about 15 feet away. Quite a distance, but it still worked. I opened the window just enough so that the tube would drop outside, and voila, problem solved. And though it was a kind of a duct tape, chicken wire, white trash way of fixing things, in other words, it looked terrible, it did the job. So then what should you get out of this rant? Well, when you get down to Latin America and get your dryer, because you're going to get one, I guarantee it, make sure you can direct that exhaust vent outside somehow. Now, if you own the place, you'll want to bust a hole in the nearest outside wall. Buy one of those dryer vent attachment cowls with a flap on it that fits into the hole you've punched. And of course, it's got a flap on it so birds and animals don't come into your house. And of course, they're pitched to keep the rain out. And they only cost maybe $5 or $10 at a local hardware store. Oh, and since dryers are scarce, you might not find one in a local hardware store, but you can buy one on Amazon for $10. And because they're aluminum, they're light, weigh only about a pound or two, so your shipping's not going to be any more than $10 either. Oh, and once again, every building that's worth its salt here in Latin America is made out of concrete, glass, and rebar. So Unless you're a pretty handy do-it-yourselfer, you're probably better off calling someone like a maintenance guy, cement contractor, bricklayer, to punch that hole, put that exhaust tube in there, and finish it off so it looks halfway decent and not like a hack job. Of course, if you have the right tools and you're used to working with concrete and block, you can do it yourself. But, you know, busting up walls is a dirty job. A local maintenance guy or cement contractor would surely do it for around $20. But then again, when gringos and expats first get the hell out of Dodge and end up in Latin America, they don't end up buying, or it's not recommended, for at least 6 months to a year. So you're going to be renting. That means you'll probably end up buying an extension tube and running it out the closest window. If you don't, you'll end up with the same clothes and humidity problems as Frankie and every other expat who lands here, rents a place, and has a dryer. All right, now I've got reason 2674 why I'm so glad I got the hell out of Dodge. Listen to this. Just yesterday, I ordered something from Amazon. Since the Black Friday sales are on and there's some fantastic deals, I bought a bass guitar amplifier. I lost my old Steady amplifier friend in my last move, and now I'm getting a new one. So far, so good. I went to the Amazon site, about to place the order, and suddenly a pop-up window. Big yellow warning sign. It says, warning. This purchase may cause cancer and reproductive harm. And then it's got a website that you're supposed to click on. And when I get there, it says, welcome to the California Proposition 65 product warning website. Then it goes on to say, this particular amplifier contains chemicals deemed to be health risks, like toluene, flame retardants, formaldehyde glues, petroleum products, wood dust, styrene, and benzene compounds. So I'm thinking that's all well and good, but you know what? I'm not, in the near future anyway, planning on eating, licking, or having intimate contact with my new bass amp. Though I do want to thank the useless team of parasitic California blood clots who call themselves scientists out there with the crucial job of warning people not to consume their bass amps. Though I can see in some people's minds those were taxpayer dollars well spent. My hat's off to all you guys and gals who found such totally useless work. Oh, and not to worry, my Panama hat made in Ecuador is not made out of any petroleum product. And though I do say sometimes I'll eat my hat as a figure of speech, I wouldn't want to put my reproductive system or huevos at risk. So again, thanks for the warning, you useless dickheads. And of course, I mean that in the most kind and Christian way.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.